welcome to Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat, and each week I publish a new episode with a new climate champion as my guest. We talk about what they do to help mitigate climate change, what their vision for the future is, and what made them motivated for the challenge. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com. For episode 27, my guest is my brother, Jeremy Krivat, assistant principal at Aspire's Alexander Twilight College Preparatory Academy, a Sacramento public elementary school that serves TK through fifth grade. Jeremy and I discussed how schools are participating in the fight against climate change, how educational staff explain it to young children, and how they are preparing young minds to participate in the solution. Is there a bit of nepotism interviewing my brother? Yes, but no. First, I'm on vacation this week with my family for the 4th of July, and I don't have any other way to get an episode done. Second, I've been meaning to have someone on the show that isn't directly associated with climate change, so two birds, one stone. In addition to his job as assistant principal, Jeremy and his wife Jocelyn have co-authored a memoir about each of their experiences 10 years ago when Jocelyn needed a life-saving heart transplant. Spoiler alert, since then she wrote the book and ran two half marathons. If you are interested in purchasing the memoir, search for Krivat on Amazon. It's called In Sickness and in Health. You might also see my wife Kathy's gourmet cat mystery novels and my daughter Shayna's volumes of short stories, Tales of Mundane Magic. They are all wonderful reads. That's right, I'm plugging my family's writings. Even more nepotism. I guess I'm starting the second half of Climate Champions podcast with the nepotism episode. James Henry Bedell, and yes, he's Shayna's significant other. Take it away. Welcome to Climate Champions. My guest today is Jeremy Krivat, my brother, and the first person that I'm talking to that isn't directly associated with climate change, because I think it's important to get that perspective. Jeremy is an assistant principal at Aspire's Alexander Twilight College Preparatory Academy. It's a public elementary school that serves TK through fifth grade in Sacramento. Welcome to Climate Champions. Can you talk about a moment or moments when you realized this was something important that you needed to be involved with in some way?
You know, I was always typically aware, you know, because this has been going on for years and years. People talk about green and it was recycling. And I would say that the big turnaround where I realized, wow, this is something to really think about and be nervous about was Sandy in New York, Hurricane Sandy. My school was in the financial district of New York City, the school I was working for at that time. Our building was lucky. We weren't closed that long, but the subway stations down there, there were a couple of stations that were actually closed for a few years. I mean, they were literally underwater. I realized, wow, parts of Manhattan are in danger of becoming the ocean. And it just was amazed me because I don't think people panicked enough about it. They thought it was just, oh, it's just one of those weird one-off things. But actually, in one of the areas, I believe it was a little bit New Jersey on the shore over there, and then in some areas in Brooklyn, there was just a regular storm just a few weeks later. And the same flooding started to happen. And there was like major damage just from a regular storm. And I was just like, what is going on? And I decided I need to figure this out, you know, and just kind of have some kind of understanding of how serious this is.
And why is doing something about it personally important to you?
Well, I spend my life right now just obsessed with creating a better life for the students that I serve. I serve underserved communities, and all day long I'm trying to create an education, an environment for them, a support system for them that's going to give them a chance to have a great life. And it seems kind of like, what's the point of doing that if we're going to have a new challenge that's beyond their control, regardless of how well they do in school, because our generation didn't do anything? So that really gets to me when I think about that, as I look at them and, you know, and I have kindergartners that are 5, 6 years old, and wow. I just want them to have a world to live in.
When you meet someone that denies climate change, how do you explain it to them so that they maybe can understand it?
Well, the first thing I try to do is most of the people that I've encountered in my life, especially back home from the East Coast, not as much here on the West Coast, the big issue has been, and the motivator for them to be in denial, is the wording that was used before climate change when we talked about global warming. Because when you're in New York and it's winter and it's December, and not everybody has the same level of education, not everybody is aware of things, you know, they're very locked into their own lives and doing the same things, and they hear the word global warming, and they think of it as it's getting warmer, but it's 0 degrees and they're freezing. And right at that moment, they argue that. They go, well, if there's this climate change, if it's so serious, if it's happening so quickly, why is it still 0 degrees? Why is there a 2-foot snowstorm? And when you have your own president of the United States using that argument, that's what I've run into in as far as people in denial. That's kind of like their backing, their argument against what I'm saying. And my reaction to that is, look, and it's really hard. You know, it's the same thing when someone's afraid of flying, right? It's like, oh, did you hear about 3 years ago a plane crash and people died? I'm terrified. And it's really, I know there's an emotional aspect to that, but it's really hard to... How do you, you know, and I try to get them to see the statistics, to look at the overall data for a long period of time. And it's really hard to do that sometimes, but to just ask, are you willing to, instead of looking at it day by day, oh, it was 0 degrees today, it was 5 degrees today, what about the average temperature over the last 5 years compared to the 5 years before that? I was in Alaska, I was in Glacier Bay, and I was watching chunks of ice falling. And I asked one of the crew members, I go, is this normal? Is it just always like that? And he goes, it is now. So, there's physical evidence, it's happening. I wish our president would just go witness it. You know, another thing, challenge I go against is it seems that people can be very picky and selective to what type of science they accept and what type of science they don't accept. I know plenty of people who, when they're sick, they take medicine to get better. And they use technology, and they're using all of this by people, scientists, who've created and invented. And they trust them. They trust them when they take a vaccine. They trust them when they take medication that they'll get better. They go into hospitals, and we allow people to cut us open. We have such a trust in science because we want to live and we want to survive. Then when we have scientists who say, this is happening, carbon is increasing in our atmosphere, and that's a bad thing, all of a sudden, they're willing to just discredit that and not believe it. And it's hard for me to understand the difference. Why would you accept, why are you accepting one type of science? And it seems like I'm answering my own question. It's whether or not, it's whether or not you feel that you're being affected or impacted. If you're sick, you feel sick, you're being impacted, you need help. So you accept the science. You accept the research that says this is the best plan of action for you to get better and get healthy. Now, the earth is hurting really bad right now. And there are scientists, let's just for now say those are the doctors. And they're telling you from their research, this is what we have to do to make the planet better. And there's this resistance. And I would imagine it's from people who have not been directly impacted. But I do notice that people in Texas, people in Florida are changing. So it's not, you know, forget about political lines. They're changing. Suddenly they care. If you know, Floridians care a lot more right now about the topic of climate change than ever before because they're being directly impacted.
Do you ever have to explain climate change to your students?
Oh, yeah. You know, they hear things and they come up. And, you know, for years in schools, you talk about clean air and those kind of things. It's a tricky subject because now it's become very political. We always have to be careful about that. We don't want to offend other people based on beliefs. And that's scary to say. It's scary to say that, to say it like a belief, right? When we know it's factual.
Because 2 + 2 = 4. Do you have problems saying that?
I don't. So saying that there's more carbon in our atmosphere.
And actually, let me ask this. What about saying that the earth is round?
I don't have a problem saying that.
Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the perception is that those things that we know to be true, and we know the climate, the things we know about the climate and climate change to be true, is not universally accepted or as universally accepted. So we have to be careful about how we introduce it. A lot of the things we talk about, like you just said, 2 + 2 = 4, the difference is the parents believe that too. And when you start teaching students things their parents aren't ready to accept or fully embraced, it's a little bit harder. It's also a little bit harder because climate change, the results and the impact of it, we have to be careful about how we say that to a 5 or 6 year old, because it's easy to create anxiety in people of that age, right? We can, adults have a lot of, right, we have a lot of anxiety about it. So there are precautions that we have to take. So I try to stick to the facts, and I try to say it without being too dramatic, in the sense that I don't want, it's different how I talk to an adult. I don't want to scare them, but what I want to do is have them thinking. So the way I approach it is, what's the most important thing in the world that keeps you alive? You know, until they get to air, breathing, and how important it is, and what's in air that we need. And, you know, and even kids at that age, we teach them in the most basic lessons, they know oxygen is important. They already know by second grade, you know, most kids will tell you, trees are important, they make oxygen. So we use that and say, we need more trees, we need more plants, we need to do things to keep them alive, so we'll have that oxygen to breathe. So we're just trying to put the roots without getting them into the argument that seems to be going on about it, or cause. We just want to at least put that understanding, that knowledge in them, that oxygen is important, they need it to live. How does oxygen come into this world? Why is it in our atmosphere for us to breathe? And what's bad in the world for us to breathe? And if they could start with that base, and we do all the other things that we teach them, like literacy and the ability to do research and read and educate themselves and find out things for themselves rather than just rely on what people tell them, we're hoping we're going to create the base for, you know, a new generation that's going to be able to make the right decisions.
So it sounds like that's a very fulfilling thing for you to be able to do, to shape how children, young children, think, to make them citizens that can evaluate things for themselves.
It's the drive. It's why you get into education. People who are in education for other reasons don't typically last long. You have to have that passion and that desire.
What else do you do to impact climate change?
Well, now I have a voice. You know, I have a voice about it. I used to be really quiet about it because it's just another thing to be attacked on, another thing for ridicule and to fight. And I realized, I think I've come to a point where if people want to attack me for believing in climate change and believing, like you said, 2 + 2 = 4, then at some point you have to be able to be willing to take those on, those attacks on, because I think that not doing anything and not trying to be a voice, it'll be a lot harder to reconcile that in 25 years from now, when so many more people will be dying and so many more people will be negatively impacted by this.
What about challenges you've run into?
The challenge comes up all the time, you know, with a lot of different things that I would like to see done to improve the world, improve people's lives. Is it economically beneficial to the people in power, the people that really drive the decision making? Even when I try to promote behavior in my company, the first thing I think of, and I even said it going for a position where we were going to try to improve attendance in our schools, the first thing I needed to do was show the dollar signs, right? And that's just human nature. It's like, you know, everybody has, they're balancing all these different things, all these other responsibilities, and how am I going to get this person to prioritize attendance? Well, I thought, who's my audience? My audience is principals that are balancing very little resources to do a lot of things, to accomplish huge, tremendous tasks. So I have to show them how I'm going to increase their resources, and I have to connect attendance to money. Well, I think it's the same thing with any issue. If I can't get, or if I can't convey or communicate, or if the people that feel the same way we do as a group cannot show the people in power, and when I say that, I mean a lot of large corporations that still aren't on board, politicians, community leaders, if we can't get them to understand climate change just as vividly as we see it, how could we create that financial spin? How can we make it that they see that? Or you know, even forget about how we see how there's profit in it. How about just that it's more important than profit? That even if it wasn't going to be profitable to accept climate change and adjust and adapt in how you run your business, or how would we convince them that it's just more important anyway. What's the point of making lots and lots of money and being the biggest organization in the world and being super profitable when the world starts to crumble around us?
And I personally do fear that it will take more weather events that are disasters before enough people are convinced to really drive the change we need. And by then, we'll be in a situation where we have lots of issues we can't solve quickly.
Yeah, I agree. It's a numbers game. Again, it goes back to how many people are impacted. Not that we're rooting for them. I would never root for one of those events. But unfortunately, every time there is one, that's where there is an increase of people concerned about the climate. I mean, it literally leads to that. I think what's been going on, you know, with the hurricanes, with the fires in California, again, with Florida being evidence, we see what turns people's minds on this subject, and it's being impacted. I wish there was another way to make them feel the impact of other people without having it to be them, without having to wait for that hurricane to hit a different state or for there to be fires in another state or there be maybe, who knows, another dust bowl in the Midwest, whatever it is that's going to happen in each area.
So we've talked about some challenges. How about some successes that you're proud of?
In my professional life, I'm part of an amazing organization, Aspire Public Schools, and we have adopted a really strong desire to break the model, the current design in the educational system that's existed for 40, 50 years, forever, where we predictably fail to teach kids how to read. We have an alarmingly high rate of illiteracy, and we haven't really changed that, and worse, it affects specific groups, right? So we know who those groups are. It's based on socioeconomical status, which ends up impacting our African-American students, our Latino students, all over the country. We are bucking the trend. We have some schools that are doing a great job. I'm currently in a school that's very committed to turning those trends around. When we grow our educational system, if we educate and we teach and have more success teaching these students to read, to be thinkers, we teach them social emotional learning so they learn to be stronger people, people who can face the challenges of the world emotionally. I mean, you see that's such a big issue now with people controlling their emotions with all the anger. And I think by doing that, we're creating more and more people that can become aware, make good arguments, create more change for themselves and the people around them.
If I asked you for your biggest success, what would you say?
Nothing.
We can move on then.
Well, my personal biggest success is more on a case-by-case basis. A handful of students throughout the years, each year it might be one, it might be two, it might be three students, that I've really made a major impact in their life. And you get that feedback through those students later on, because now that I've been in education for a long enough time, I have students that contact me and tell me the impact. But through letters from parents, through the students' results, through their ability to improve their attendance, to improve their time in the classroom and independently learn, I would say that's right now are the biggest successes that I hold on to.
If each of us impacted one, two, or three students a year, we'd have a totally different world.
Oh, there's no question about it. But again, just like with climate change, it's a mindset. It goes deep into people's thinking. People hold on to really old traditional ways. Things that work in their mind are the things, the way they were raised. And again, it's about looking at that data that shows it may have worked for certain individuals, but overall as a system, it's never worked. And that we just have to see that and recognize that and be willing to change and try new things. And if everybody was willing to do that, we absolutely could not only individually help a few children each year as educators, but if we did it collectively, it would probably be a multiplier effect and we would affect a lot more lives than just a few for each of us.
What's your vision for the future? What do you see 10, 20, 30, 40 years out?
It's not good. It's actually kind of gray, only based on my experience. My experience tells me that although some corporations I understand are changing their tune and are behind this, I seriously doubt the big oil companies are. I see that it's going to take a lot more pain before things are going to get better. And it's unfortunate because there are really good people right now that know, and there are people doing the best they can, and I think they're heroes because later on, a lot of the technologies and the people I've heard you interview in the weeks before, I think a lot of them might make a difference and really might make it a lot, not nearly as bad as it possibly could be. But I think, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot more pain, there's going to be a lot more suffering, a lot more things we're not going to be able to reverse. until all the people, the politicians, all of the corporations, until we're one collective society that understands the importance of this, hopefully it won't be too late.
Do you have any questions for me?
Give me some sign of hope. Where do you think the hope lies? I mean, what could realistically happen?
I think a lot of things are going well. Technology is bringing us new forms of generation that are renewable, of zero carbon. Maybe even nuclear can have a play, potentially, solving its problems and giving us zero carbon. We have more and more politicians that are awakening to the danger that we're facing and are getting behind it. We have lots of companies now that are part of the RE, Renewable Energy 100 movement, moving to renewable energy. Many states are putting in goals. So there's a lot of good. The question I have is just whether it's going to be in time. How much damage have we done already? We already see so much impact. And will we make enough change fast enough? Will we view it as something that is critical and take the urgent action we need to solve it? But the more impact we have, the more solutions we'll put in place. And so at some point, we'll peak out on impact and things will start to get better. It's just how high will the impact get is very difficult to predict.
What did you think of the Democratic primary debate? I found it interesting because there was more talk of climate change than ever before. I even went as far to say at the end when they asked that question, two words, and what's important to you, that I said, I'm only going to support candidates that mention that top two, climate change. And then there was that one guy, you know his name.
Jay Inslee.
I loved him. I mean, I loved what he was saying about climate change. I love him for putting his agenda there. Because we know that that forces, we saw it 4 years ago with Bernie Sanders and Hillary, that that forces agenda for the other candidates, which is a beautiful thing.
It's even if he ends up losing, even if he got out there.
Even if he ends up losing, he did a great thing if he pushes and enforces the other candidates to address it more seriously. So I was just wondering how you felt about that.
I think you put it very well. I'm glad that it's a discussion topic. It has to be a discussion topic. It has to be a priority with our leaders of the country.
Yeah.
What's interesting is today we don't necessarily have that leadership everywhere, but we have it in pockets so that we're still moving forward. So do you have anything else that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I just want to mention a big driving force for me is equity. And I want my students to have every opportunity in their life that everyone else has. And I believe that whatever resources are required to make that happen, that's what has to happen. And that's what equal is, when each person gets the resources that they need. One of the things I've noticed over the past 10 years, 15 years, with all the events that we're talking about, these natural events, is who's being impacted most heavily. Without that privilege of family with money and cousins and being really established, because we forget that not only like some of us have homes and we're established and financially set, we also have the backing of family that's in that same position as well. A lot of the people affected in New Orleans and affected in New York, out in different areas, in Florida, they don't have those resources. So they're being just another thing that's impacting them even more than it impacts just the average person. So I'd like to see that we get even more relief in for them, but also just as an even stronger motivator of why we have to address this and reverse what the effects of climate change.
Thank you. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
We could talk about the Mets. They're not having the best year.
Okay, then if it's okay with you, I'm going to wrap this up and I'm going to do it with a rap.
That sounds fun.
I know you know I'm doing a rap. Let's see, you work at a school, it's run by a spire. You want to see there be less floods and less fire. You told me you like his perspective, whether he loses or he wins, Lee. At least they're talking climate because of Governor Jay Inslee. You experienced Hurricane Sandy. It brought a lot of rain, but it also got you thinking because it brought a lot of pain. You said, hey, I want to do something that could help. It doesn't do anything to complain and yelp. So you'd use your position talking to the youth, making sure they can evaluate what's false and what's truth. It's like the world is bleeding and it needs a suture. I'm so glad you're with our kids educating our future.
Wow. I'm really glad that I'm going to bring you on to perform at the Comedy Sports in Sacramento. You got some talent. You got some skills there.
Oh, thank you.
At the end of this week's wrap, Jeremy mentions my performing improv with him in Sacramento. Jeremy regularly performs improv with Comedy Sports Sacramento. I am very excited to be doing a show with him there on July 20th. And speaking of improv, if you are visiting San Diego and want some great laughs, most weekends I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv, or both. And if you are interested in learning how to improve your communication skills while having a great fun time, consider taking a class at an improv workshop in your town. My training in improvisation helps me face the fear and let out the glee. To confirm specific improv show dates, or if you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. While most of my guests directly focus on climate change as part of what they do day to day, Jeremy does not. But indirectly, his impact is great. Jeremy ensures that our children, the next generation of climate champions, are ready to take on this critical challenge to mitigate climate change.